Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Ben Daniels and Brian Ashlock. Well, now, two of us have our fancy new microphone set up, but one of us doesn't because they don't take the podcast seriously enough. Let's lead off with someone who does take the podcast seriously. Brian, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. I'm really enjoying my fancy new microphone.
You sound so clear and commanding this week.
I like to think that's how I always sound. It's just that, you know, now the rest of the world is finally getting to hear the dulcet tones of my voice.
No, that's good. That's really good. Ben, how is it coming to us live from a fucking sewer again?
Yeah, so I'm here shouting at you from another room. yeah, it turns out that my Chromebook does not support the microphone, and I need to get an adapter to make that happen, so... For now, I'm going to sound like shit, and everyone else is going to sound wonderful, and we're going to have a semi-professional podcast, and that's it's better than you fucking people deserve, frankly.
Well, you know, I think it's worth pointing out
our Patreon and get Ben a better laptop,
or you could leave us 5-star reviews that will encourage Ben to set up his microphone next week when we record our podcast. That'll get you motivated, right, Ben?
I promise you, nothing will encourage me to take this more seriously than I already do.
Ben, goddamn, you got to keep it kayfabe. Come on.
This is already a huge burden on my week. I got to fucking sit down and talk to you assholes about a soccer game that is usually not a fun one to experience live, and somehow I got to fucking relive this moment for another hour. Nah.
Moments, Ben. Sometimes you get to discuss two games in a week, like we're doing this week. Not to mention a transfer window. Which is always just really great to think about.
Well, I guess if I can ask you people to suffer through this, I'll be a better sport about it.
So we have two games to talk about. Let's start off with the first one over the weekend. It was Tottenham 1, or Tottenham, I wish it was Tottenham 1. Liverpool 1, Tottenham nothing at the new White Hart Lane. Brian, let's start with you on this one. I don't know about you. I expected this to really be just a... I expected Spurs just to get thrown in the dumpster and tossed into a river. It didn't quite go that way, though, did it?
No, I mean, I think you saw the lineup come out, and you see Tanganga in the starting lineup, and you're like, oh, we're punting on this. Like, this... We're just like, all right, we're going to lose 7-0, and it doesn't matter. But it didn't turn out like that. I mean, it was a match that I think you would say is fairly typical of a Jose Mourinho coach team. It was conservative. There was a low block. We tried to hit Liverpool on the counter. And, you know, we had some good chances. We had some chances to equalize, maybe even to go ahead. And it didn't come to fruition. But I thought, by and large, the performance was pretty good, considering what Liverpool's been doing to teams all season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I honestly thought when Tanganga was in the lineup that Jose was trying to make a point about how shitty our squad is, and when we inevitably got wrecked 5-0, he was going to be able to point to this poor young kid and say, you know, look what Daniel Levy has forced me to do is play this ill-equipped child, and we got our asses kicked. He needs to buy me players in the transfer window. That's my full conspiracy theory brain at work. But it turns out that he is the best player Tottenham Hotspur has ever seen. So that was surprising.
So
and very exciting.
Let's talk about this, Dijon. Do you think, and I'm only half joking when I say this, do you think that's what Mourinho is doing and whoops, he stumbled into something? Or do you think I don't know. My brain, I'm sure this is not line up with facts. My brain is not trained to think Jose Mourinho sees anyone under the age of 19 in training and thinks, I'll start them this week. Like, it just seems like a very out of character move for Mourinho.
Yeah, and it worked like really well. Sacrifice.
He's been great. I think he's been great in two games, honestly, all things considered.
Yeah, I think he was a human sacrifice that somehow survived the bloody ritual, came out stronger on the other side. You know, I've liked him for a while. He was really good in preseason. He was good in preseason last year. You know, he's still young. He's clearly talented. And, you know, I think one of the things that we saw from him, particularly against Middlesbrough, is that physically, for a kid his age, he looks very ready in a way that someone like Kyle Walker-Peters really never has.
Even Harry Winks doesn't look as, just from an eye test perspective, he looks a lot more ready than Winks does, frankly.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I was impressed with him about was, you know, he got into some pretty good positions and did a good job in terms of maintaining the line that we were playing and then also being in position to block shots. I mean, the Liverpool attack in the first, I don't know, what was it, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, where he gets back and blocks a shot off the line. Like, he was a little at fault in the buildup in that chance, but like, he recovered well and he got back and was able to prevent Liverpool from taking the lead that early on. And you know, he's going to get credit for his physical stature and, you know, his pace, which was obviously important against Liverpool's attack. But I mean, he read the game very well. He was good in terms of his positioning, and that's for someone who doesn't have much game time, particularly game time at a high level. I mean, he's been playing for the reserves, the under-23s. So to see him out there and doing that against, you know, the best team in the Premier League, I thought that was one of the more impressive things.
Ben, I was watching the game on mute. How much pace and power did we get from the commentary team?
You know, again, more in the Middlesbrough game when he was playing fullback and bombing down the wing. We got a lot of strength and power and that sort of narrative. But this, it was just him, like, putting his body on the line pretty constantly. But I thought he was also very technically sound as a defender. You know, he defended Sadio Mane very well. You know, every time they would get him free down the wings, he would shepherd him into a less dangerous area or pick the ball off of him or, you know, put in a crunching tackle to make Mane think twice about doing anything. Yeah, he was great. And Chris Miller, a.k.a. Windy, on Twitter, made a comment before the game started about his courage and bravery. And, you know, I have to say I rolled my eyes a little bit about that. But I happily ate my words because, I mean, he really was a brave lad out there.
But that's,
you know, he was fearless.
I don't want to take away from that because I think that's true, and I think I had the exact same reaction you did, and Chris was Windy, however we're going to refer to him, was totally right about that. But I think what impressed me the most was for a under-23 player, for a guy who, as far as I know, certainly hasn't gotten senior minutes with Tottenham. I don't think he's been on loan substantially. I could be wrong about that, but he was way more positionally disciplined and aware than I was expecting for somebody with that little first team experience. I mean, he was not.
His maturity and discipline was, I think, really the standout feature of his game. Is he just looked like a seasoned professional and not an overeager child?
Well, especially for a guy who can really get on his bike and go get it. I mean, he's fast. And I feel like when we've seen a lot of those types of players in the past at that age coming out of the team who have that ability, they tend to be a little more positionally sloppy just because when you're that fast, especially at a, you know, sort of an under-23, under-19 level, you know, you can make up for, you can, you know, you can do what Walker can do or was doing with us at a professional level, which is you can cover your mistakes in a way that a slower player couldn't. But for a guy who's that fast at that age, I mean, I've been nothing but impressed. And it's only two games, so you don't want to get too carried away. I've been nothing but impressed, though, about, you know, sort of his awareness on the pitch, his decision-making. It was really very good shit. I mean, he's just
I'm going to stop you right now, Greg. We need to get very carried away, and like I would say too carried away, so that six games from now we can throw him under the bus and scream about him for like the next 3 years.
I mean, that is, we are running a podcast about soccer, so that's the right thing to do.
The one thing I wanted to say about Tanganga is, like, I very much expected him to be Cameron Carter-Vickers light, and
it's a good way of putting it.
But he was very much not. Like, no. You know, Carter-Vickers has been on loan for the last couple years in the championship.
Last couple decades.
But he's been playing, you know, against men in the championship. He's been getting senior caps for the U.S. national team. And I thought, okay, that is a player that, you know, is probably years further along in his development than Tanganga is. And then Tanganga comes into the squad and plays this game against Liverpool. And you're like, oh, no, actually, this kid is really good. And he's actually significantly better than Carter-Vickers. And you can see now why the club is happy to loan out Carter-Vickers every year and keep a player like Tanganga around, even if, you know, we can debate whether the loan versus keeping him at the club is altering his development or hindering it. But I was I was really pleasantly surprised.
You know, at his age, I think if he's going to be this close to the first team, like, I'm happy to have him around. You know, it's all about getting him minutes, and if we can do that and are willing to do that, then yeah, there's no reason to send him out on loan. But if we just see suddenly we realize we have this really promising talent, let's get him alone for half a season so that next year he can really be ready to be a key contributor, I'd be fine with that too.
I can't get over the fact that Mourinho started him. I mean,
well, you know, so that's interesting because there's a video of Jose's first or second, like very early on, training session with the team, and one of the assistant coaches points out Tanganga to Jose, and he was like, oh, you're the one who kept Cristiano Ronaldo in your pocket. I know about you. And like he said that audibly for the cameras to hear. So, you know, for a guy who has put very, very little stock into youth teams historically, for him to have been already aware of this kid based on like a preseason fixture, I don't know. I mean, now seeing it pay dividends a little bit is maybe encouraging about Jose, but certainly encouraging about Tanganga.
We've heard a lot of talk.
This particular storyline on the Amazon documentary is going to be great.
It's the first thing about that documentary I've heard where I would actually be looking forward to watching that.
Yeah, it's going to be like, there's going to be like clips of Tanganga at home with his family, and we're going to talk to like his mother and his father and like all his extended family, and they're going to be talking about how he's been at the club for years, and then we're going to cut to Jose revealing the lineups and letting him know he's going to start. And then, yeah, it's going to be a very emotional portion of the documentary. I'm very excited for it.
Oh, I mean, the whole documentary is going to be structured around the rise of the new Leslie King, Japheth Kinganga, and that's what we're going to hear, because obviously he is the homegrown savior of the club that Harry Kane only wishes he could be.
And I mean, honestly, there's really no other interesting storylines around the club, so why wouldn't we structure it that way?
So, Chris, or Wendy, had another tweet that I would like to talk about, because A, it was a good joke, and B, I think it is a hot take that bears some closer examination. After the game, he made the point that, I believe it was after Liverpool, it could have been after the Middlesbrough game, he made the point that Jose Mourinho has done more for Tottenham's youth players than Mauricio Pochettino has done in the last year or so. And I don't know if that's wrong. Like, I know it was a joke, and he also probably believes it. I think I might believe it. That was, I mean, like, Pochettino used to get a lot of rep for that, but who's the last guy that Pochettino really promoted from the youth teams and succeeded? I mean, it can't be Winks.
Yeah,
but
Winks. It's Winks.
It is? Because, I mean, if that's the case, we've heard all this talk about, you know, whether it's Onuma or Luke Amos now, and we're finally loaning guys out again. But, like, I don't know what it says about Pochettino, because I'm very much a prospect skeptic.
I mean, look, I've said this a lot over the last years of Pochettino's reign, and I got a lot of shit for it. But the reality is I firmly believe that Pochettino's faith in youth players like Harry Kane, like Nabil Bentaleb, like Ryan Mason, were very circumstantial to the fact that, you know, the senior players weren't buying into his vision and the youth players were, and he made a choice early on in his tenure that that's who he was going to back. But as the team got better and we no longer had those, like, rifts in the squad, and needed to find, like, well, I mean, okay, yes, we all know how it ended. But, you know, he never, unless his hand was forced to play these youth players over, you know, angry senior players, he didn't. Like, you know, we saw the way he handled Onuma and Kyle Walker-Peters and Cameron Carter-Vickers, who, you know, again, I don't think is good enough or was ever good enough, but, you know, we saw the way he handled these guys, and he was not making a concerted effort to bring these youth players through into the team. And, like, you know, yes, Harry Winks got minutes, and Oliver Skip got minutes, and Kyle Walker-Peters even got minutes, but it just didn't seem like he was focused on that aspect of the club so much as sometimes he needed a body, and these were the bodies.
I mean, I don't know about you guys. I assumed largely this was a product of the youth academy doesn't really have anything ready for prime time yet. Either these guys aren't good, or they weren't ready for Spurs, or they weren't ready for Spurs yet. I just, you know, I think it's just so crazy that there was 18 years old? There was an 18-year-old at center back who was so ready that Jose Mourinho can see him.
And he's 20.
20, okay, still, okay. Under 21, and there's a guy that so good that Jose Mourinho can see that he's good. And brings him into the first team. And not only brings him into the first team, but he's capable of having a great performance against Liverpool. I mean, it's just, like, I don't know.
Out of position, like, 3 days later.
Yes.
And that's really, like, the most, like, promising thing to me about the potential for this kid and his future with Jose's Spurs is, you know, even when Pochettino would bring in Kyle Walker-Peters and he would win man of the match somehow every game he played.
That's, you know, a little disingenuous,
whatever,
but, like,
whatever. Like, the fact is he did. But then he would disappear for months at a time. But Jose played Tanganga 2 games in a row. And I don't know. That to me is encouraging in a way that, you know, the way we handled Kyle Walker-Peters of, oh, good job, Kyle Walker-Peters, man of the match against Newcastle, opening day of the season. We're not going to see you until the last day of the season, where you will once again win the man of the match, probably against Newcastle again. I don't remember. But, you know, the willingness to play him a second time on the back of that performance was really cool to see. And he was really good.
He was great. Out of position, like you said. Like, he was bombing up and down as a right back. Now, you know, I'm a little more cautious of seeing him as a right back against, you know, a not championship level club. But still, it was an impressive performance. I mean, you got to be excited. I mean, I think we're all in a Tangang. It's very exciting. It's some extremely good shit, and I'm very happy about it. But there's something else, I think, weirdly enough, in a year where we have struggled for positives, I think there was another serious positive after this game, during this game, which was Lo Celso.
Was it Christian Eriksen?
Yeah, fuck that guy.
I was wrong. Damn.
Yeah, no, that guy sucks. And this is not an Interpodcast, so. But yeah, Lo Celso just, I thought he looked fucking amazing in this game. And it seems like Mourinho is also starting to buy into that. He had some very positive things to say about Lo Celso in the press, which is something we've been kind of waiting for him to do. I mean, he's starting to look like the player we all hoped he would be. In the again, two very good performances against first Liverpool and then Borough. I mean, Ben, you're also on the Lo Celso hype train. I mean, was this encouraging to see?
Yeah, I mean, especially the Liverpool performance, you know. I know it was circumstantial. They were up a goal, and they kind of retreated a little bit and let us come onto the game. But when we brought on Lo Celso and Lamela, we really, really turned the tide and looked much more likely to get an equalizer than they looked like they were going to get a second. And, you know, Lo Celso had that great opportunity towards the end of the game when Aurier crossed the ball to the back post and he slid in. And I got to say, I honestly thought when Lo Celso missed that chance that that was like the final nail in his coffin, that Jose would say, I don't care how good he is, you know, he didn't score the goal, so fuck him. It's the excuse he needed to bury him forever. Like, that's what I was fully expecting. But then he came out starting against Burrow and put in a phenomenal performance. He did score a goal in that game, you know, that none of us got to see because of ESPN's terrible streaming service. But, you know, we were told when it finally started working that he definitely scored that first goal. But, yeah, it was another, you know, again, against championship opposition, but he was great. And
but it wasn't just the goal in that game. Well. Yeah, it was. He just
he did everything well.
I think the only concerning thing for me about Lo Celso and the way we're utilizing him is that we seem to refuse to use him in a deeper role. He always kind of comes on and plays further forward or out on the wing, and we know that he can play deeper. I mean, we saw him do it at PSG. He did it much less at Batiste. But with a team that's now really struggling for midfield options and specifically midfield passing, I think it's weird that we continue to persist with, like, Eriksen as opposed to just throwing Lo Celso into midfield and allowing him to do the Eriksen stuff that Eriksen seems to be disinterested in doing.
You know, I changed my mind on this a little bit after watching that Liverpool game, because I think in a short term you're very right, but I can see why this team looks at Lo Celso and long term thinks this guy should be playing in the attacking band. And, you know, maybe in the, like, you know, he's probably the best answer to how do we fix our midfield right now. But I can understand where if you're looking at us and you're thinking about where do we see him in an ideal team next year, the year after that, you know, it's up front, it's running the attack in the way Eriksen kind of used to. And, you know, especially, like, as long as we're going to, like, have Eriksen fucking, like, sandbagging the team, we might as well throw him in midfield. I mean...
Yeah. I think as good as he was as a midfielder in his limited time at PSG, you know, his breakout season came at Batiste as a number 10 attacking midfielder, creative, goal-scoring, you know, very prototypical Eriksen kind of player. And, you know, I think we probably bought him to replace Eriksen, you know, given how Pochettino and now Jose have used him and seen him. And while I think he absolutely would be a better midfield option than most of the midfield options we're using, you know, the best version of Tottenham Hotspur over the next year probably means buying an actual midfielder and letting Lo Celso off the leash a little bit to be creative and be fun.
I mean, I think that goal against Burrow was sort of everything great about him in a nutshell, where he's opportunistic, he sees it, like, you could tell he reads the field well, gets the ball, is able to sort of dribble around some defenders and put himself in a difficult position, and then get a good shot off. And I know he sort of scuffed that really great chance against Liverpool, but, you know, you can see the way he dictates the attack and instantly puts, like, a level of pressure on the other team that we're just not otherwise creating. And, you know, I don't know if anyone else can really fix our midfield right now, but I don't think we certainly don't have anyone else who can do that attack right now.
Yeah, I remember, like, a specific moment against Burrow where he was, like, driving through the middle of the box and then just laid off, like, a really cute through ball to Tanganga running into space down the wing in a way that, like, I don't feel like I've seen from our attack since Christian Eriksen stopped deciding he wanted to play football. You know, he's just playing those clever, intelligent passes between the lines, between defenders, and creating opportunities that, you know, we've really, really missed without Eriksen, you know, even while he's on the pitch. And that, I think, yeah, it's definitely worth getting him into those positions. I mean, I'd also, again, given how bad our midfield is, I'd be very happy to see, like, him and Ndombele play in a pivot together, but if we're not getting that, I just want to see him on the pitch fucking anywhere, whether that's right wing, behind the striker, I don't care. Like, he's clearly good and influential wherever we've seemed to put him in. And I think it's time for Jose to realize that this guy needs to be starting every match.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, and I mean, we are, I mean, this is Wheeler Deal Lo Celso here. I know we're all Lo Celso apologists on this podcast. But at the same time, I feel like the last couple games, you're really starting to see him starting to assert himself in that team. And, you know, I thought particularly doing that against Liverpool, even if Liverpool had kind of switched off a little bit or whatever, I thought that was particularly impressive. And at this point, I would be comfortable with saying there is nothing wrong with Lo Celso that more game time with his teammates and more, like, sort of, I don't want to say coherent tactics, more effective tactics from his coach wouldn't solve. Like, I don't know, especially that Liverpool and that Borough game, you could just, like, that's what he's going to be in this team. At least that's what I thought watching it. It was like, this is the, like you said, Ben, this is the future of Tottenham Hotspur right here. Or at least, like, Tottenham Hotspur's attack.
Right, and he needs time to build those relationships with players so they understand how he wants to receive the ball, how he's going to pass the ball. And, like, once they start clicking, you know, so that it becomes second nature to them, I mean, I think that's really when it's going to shine. Because right now we haven't even gotten to see that, and it already looks promising. So, yeah, all on board the Lo Celso train.
So while we're talking about our Argentine future, I think we need to talk about our spectacular Argentine past. No, not that one, and not that other one either. I'm talking, of course, about Eric Lamela, who I thought had a great couple days. I thought he looked really lively on Saturday. I thought he looked fucking great against Borough with a really, really good goal. I mean, I don't know how much Lamela's got in the tank. Obviously, that guy gets hurt a lot. I was really encouraged to see him play a full 90 against Borough. You know, it was just like, I feel like we haven't seen that in a minute, and I know he probably can't do that all the time, but just, like, we talk a lot, and we'll probably talk a lot on this podcast in particular about sort of being body language doctors about Christian Eriksen and how that guy looks like he doesn't want to be there, he's mentally checked out, all this other shit. Lamela is the opposite. That guy gets on the pitch, and I don't know if there's anybody, including Harry Kane, on this team who loves Tottenham as much as that guy does. I mean, it is a delight and a pleasure, and that guy busts his ass, and it looks like he loves being there. And I don't know. I'm very happy he's still putting in performances like this in the year of our Lord 2020, and it was very fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Lamela put in a string of games together where he can actually get into a groove and find his rhythm and do shit like this. You know, there were jokes about Lamela, like, oh, he found his level against Burrow, and like, fuck you. Like, yes, he would absolutely run riot and be the best player in the history of the championship if he had the opportunity to get relegated with Tottenham Hotspur. But
which,
failing,
yeah,
that,
like, could happen.
Yeah, not a possibility. But failing that, you know, like, he just has such obvious quality and such obvious work rate and passion and give a fuck that it's just so much more than we've seen this season from a really lackluster Spurs squad that I just want to see him all the time. Even if some guys might be nominally, technically better or whatever, I don't give a shit.
Well, I think it's a lot like, you know, every sort of generation of Spurs fans or Spurs team has a player like this. Like for Ben and I, like, the first player that you associate kind of like with that sort of attitude is like Steve Malbronk. You know, was Steve Malbronk really great? No, but like every time he was on the pitch, did he try super hard and like did he endear himself to the fans? And yeah, I think he did. And you know, there are probably fans that are, you know, remember, you know, more of the early 2000s and late 90s that can think of those sort of jobbing players that like, which is unfair to Lamela because Lamela is actually very technically good. But he also really loves violence. I think to see Lamela play and to get that goal against Burrow, it's always good. And when we didn't have him in the last couple months and he wasn't playing regularly, I thought the team didn't look as good. And because especially off the bench, Lamela is an excellent energy guy. He's an excellent spark plug. Like, and it doesn't really matter the type of situation that you insert him into when he's a sub. Whether you're trying to kill a game off, he can go out there and commit violence. If you're trying to, you know, chase a lead, he can go out there and he tries stuff. He's creative on the ball. He makes incisive runs.
He's got energy. I mean, there are times you see it. It's especially this year. I mean, the team just looks like they don't have it that day and they're bored or they're tired or whatever. And he comes in and just like, you know, I mean, he's fired up. I mean, he's always fired up. And sometimes that's not the best thing in the world, but I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, look, sometimes he scores Rabona goals and sometimes he slide tackles goalkeepers while he's on a yellow. I mean, you know, it's a really a mixed bag.
I'm pretty sure he's never been sent off for Spurs, though.
Nope.
So he can do that all
That's incredible. I mean, he really is. Now, some of that's because we pulled him off before he could get it done, but, I mean, it's incredible. It's really incredible shit.
It's definitely because, like, you can see it coming with him. It's not like he has less red cards than Heung-min Son, but it's because Heung-min Son's stuff comes, like, out of the blue, and Eric Lamela, like, very definitely builds to the ultimate level of violence, and you can see it coming. You'd be like, all right, off, Eric, out, come on.
I gotta say, my number one priority for the Mourinho era of Spurs is I want to see us win a trophy while Eric Lamela is still on this team. And that might not be after this year. I mean, I don't know. I would hope that we'll keep Eric Lamela until he is just not capable of playing at this level. Because like Brian said, he is great off the bench right now. But I really want to see Eric Lamela lift a trophy with Spurs.
And I mean, the thing is like you said, like, he could go other places and he would be like a regular starter and he would be very good. Like, you can't tell me that there aren't teams in like the middle of the table Premier League that wouldn't love to have Lamela. Like, if Bournemouth or Watford or Brighton or any of those teams had Eric Lamela, he'd start every week. Like, he just absolutely would. But
well, every week he was fit, so like 12
right
weeks.
Right, so only like a few more weeks than when he's at Spurs, but yeah, I wouldn't want us to get rid of him.
But it's so weird to me when I think about it, because like, I mean, it's not weird because I've done this in other sports, but like, you know, I've gotten to watch Harry Kane at his peak in a Spurs shirt, Gareth Bale, Luka Modric, and I have differing levels of love for all those players. I don't love any of them as much as I love Eric Lamela. I mean, I think I said this on Twitter during the Borough match. Like, I love Eric Lamela more than some members of my own family. He's just the epitome of what you want to see a guy on your team sort of be able to do, except he's never fit. But other than that, it's just, he's technically gifted. He seems to be that kind of bleed for the shirt type of player. He seems to love being here. I don't know if that'll stay the case with his sort of, with Pochettino gone, but man, I don't know. We sort of watched him sort of fight through all that adversity. There's a nice storyline with him. I don't know. It's just, I love him so much, and I really want to see him lift a trophy here. And it's nice to see him sort of back in form with us.
He seems to have found like a perfect level where he's not quite good enough to warrant a transfer elsewhere, and he's not quite fit enough to be unhappy about his playing time. So we just get the very best of him in bursts. And, you know, we had that one season of, I think, was it 15-16?
Yeah, it was the Sash year.
14-15?
Yeah.
Where he was phenomenal and played, you know, regularly every week. And, like, you know, I'm still very sad that we haven't gotten to see that over the last 5 years since that year. But at this point, yeah, I'm happy to keep him in whatever capacity he's physically able to give us, because I just love seeing him out there.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is, like, we love all these intangibles, but at the end of the day, when Eric Lamela is playing well, it's also fun to watch. Like, you know, that goal against Borough, again, like, you know, probably couldn't do that against some other teams, but that was really pretty. Like, watching him sort of dribble through that entire defense, you know, pull that move and then, you know, hit that off-balance shot with his left foot. I mean, he's just a fun player, and I'm really happy I got to watch him.
Yeah, and then conversely, we've got guys like Lucas Moura, who is starting every week, and now he is our Harry Kane replacement. How do we feel about that?
I mean, that's got to be more a product of fitness than anything else, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I would have expected that Heung-min Son would be the backup striker. He's, you know, plays striker for South Korea a lot. He's plays striker for Spurs. He's obviously our second best goal scorer on the team. And yet we're still seeing him in wide areas while Lucas plays up top. Why?
Lucas is a better header. I don't really have a good explanation for that. I think that probably has more to do with where Mourinho thinks Son is a better player, and there's probably a legitimate argument to Son's better coming off the wings than Lucas, and frankly, top of his game Son is going to give you more than top of his game Lucas, so Lucas sort of loses that particular battle out, but I don't know. I agree with you. Our sort of search for a temporary striker, I find to be very odd in that we have Son right there. You know, I can believe that that's not quite the kind of guy that Mourinho wants to play at striker. And I, you know, long term, I think that's a very legitimate argument. But in the short term, that feels strange to me.
Well, we're also flailing Jose's youth policy after Tanganga. But Troy Parrott has not been in the squad for a hot minute.
Yeah, you're right. I thought it was strange.
Like a real opportunity. You know, we could go up 2-0 in the first half. That'd be a great opportunity. I mean, if we were not going to start him, it'd be a great opportunity to bring on a guy like Troy Parrott and see what he can give us.
But he wasn't even on the bench.
Not even on the bench.
I mean, now that might be due to a contract situation. You know, it's, again, I think it comes down to, like, you know, who's ready, and there's so much of that that, you know, like, I think I wouldn't be out of line in saying, like, Troy Parrott hasn't had a good performance for the Tottenham first team. Now, that's not a fair way to evaluate him. But, you know, there's a lot of hype around this kid, and I have a hard time sort of differentiating how much of that is Spurs fans wish-casting. You know, they've heard some good things about this guy, and they're just assuming that, you know, oh, he's the next big thing. Now, he might be the next big thing and also might not be ready for Spurs right now.
I mean, I don't know that he hasn't had a good first team appearance for Spurs. Like, he has played in tandem with Harry Kane. He has played without Harry Kane. And, you know, he hasn't scored or, you know, really, like, set the world alight. But he hasn't looked in confidence.
I don't think he's looked dreadful, but he hasn't had a performance like Tanganga had, sorry, this past weekend. Like, where you just sort of sit up and, like, if you hadn't heard about him, you wouldn't have sat up and taken notice of how he played for the first team.
No, but, like, you know, we haven't been very good. So.
No, I mean, that's fair. I do think that going out and trying to find a weird first-team striker, unless you think that putting Parrott in the first team is going to damage his development, which could be true, unless you think that, I think going out and getting a striker right now is insane. Considering that we have, like you said, we've got Son who can sort of do a shift there if we need it. And then you can put Parrott in, like, split their minutes, like...
I 100% disagree.
I know, you hate the youth. What do you disagree about?
No, I just, like, the idea of signing a striker now, to me, makes a lot of sense, because I was of the position that we should have signed a striker over the summer when we let Fernando Llorente go. Because, look, Harry Kane, regardless of his health, and obviously his health now is he might miss the rest of the season, He cannot and should not be playing every single minute the way he does. And to not have a viable option to play as the number nine, as an out-and-out striker in place of him is ridiculous. And like, look, Troy Parrott is good. He is young. He is not ready.
We just haven't tried it.
Sure, and now look, he's played in, like, in the preseason. I think he has, like, what, he played in the League Cup against Rochdale, and he was fine nominally. I mean, against a League One team, but I think, you know, rather than having an unproven 17-year-old or having a Lucas or a Heung-min Son play out of position, what we really need is an actual legitimate striker who can, you know, either play in place of Harry Kane or play with Harry Kane or serve as a late game substitute for Harry Kane so Harry Kane doesn't play 90 minutes every single match. And now we have to sign one. So to me there's no reason why we should not sign a striker in January.
Well, the reason would be, do you want to go get bogged down on a bad contract?
Yes, I would much rather get bogged down on a bad contract and make sure that we secure Champions League football this year.
Okay, well, first of all, like, that's optimistic.
Are we going to do that?
Well, we're going to have to win the Champions League, I think. So,
even with, like, Piatek or whoever else we're, like, linked with this window, is that a viable, like, realistic option for this team? Like, are we going to win the Champions League or finish top four? Do we believe that's a target? Because if it's not, then, fucking start Troy Parrott and see what he can do for us. If it is, then I agree with you. But, like, is it?
I don't think the top four is out of the question. I mean, obviously, I don't think we can win the Champions League. That was a joke. I don't know. Sometimes humor doesn't come across because I'm not very funny. Look, Chelsea are right now 9 points ahead of us. I don't think that Chelsea are that good. I think they've certainly shown that they have some cracks in their armor. We're behind Wolves and Sheffield and Manchester United right now. We've talked about how the schedule kind of gets easier for us over the next few weeks. I just think that if we're going to close the gap, this is the time we're going to do it. And I don't want to do it with Lucas Moura as our number nine or Troy Parrott as our number nine. Like, this is all still very much in the balance. And if it costs us, 30 or 40 million pounds to sign another striker, I think it's worth it considering the money that you can get from the Champions League. I mean, look at us, a few seasons ago when, we didn't sign anybody in January and people, it could have been the difference between us and a league title. I think we're at the point where we have to spend some money.
I think we should.
Honestly. Like, I think we should loan Troy Parrott for the rest of the season and sign somebody. Because whatever we think of Troy Parrott, even if we think he's amazing, Jose doesn't seem to. And the reality is he is not going to get those opportunities to prove that he might be the next Harry Kane. So if that's how we're going to run the season with Lucas Moura as striker, then, get this kid some minutes somewhere, whether that's Championship or League One, I don't care. But, like, get him on a pitch and, like, scoring goals somewhere so we can evaluate him properly in the summer. And I'm happy to bring in, whether it's a short-term loan signing or, a low-risk body who can do strikery things like a Fernando Llorente without being especially good, or we recognize that Harry Kane's injuries are going to be a long-term problem and we sign a long-term solution. Like, I think either of those options would make me happy. I don't really care.
It seems like right now, let's talk about Tottenham's transfer policy. It seems like we're looking to get some short-term fixes that aren't going to cost us a lot of money and get us through the season. We're going to get we've got this Gedson kid from Benfica to sort of fill the hole that Sissoko left, and we're looking at whether it's Piatek or was it Zé Luís, is that how you say it, from Porto. It looks like everyone reported that was dead today, but the thing that Zé Luís and Gedson had in common is their
we literally talked about this before.
Yeah, well, there's been like a lot of podcasting between now and then. But they're both Mendes clients who it looked like we could get relatively cheaply, keep if it worked out, and fuck off for not a lot of money if it didn't work out, and pretty soon. I don't like getting into bed with Mendes, or at least if we're going to, we should be getting better players. But it seems like the transfers we're looking at are, what can we get cheap, what can we get now, and then like maybe disentangle ourselves from if this doesn't work out. I think Piatek, one of the things that was at least heavily talked about when you read reports about it, is we want a loan as opposed to a permanent transfer. So it looks like all these moves we're hearing talked about, with the exception of that kid from QPR, are very short-term loans, and it seems like they're going to... I don't know what their transfer policy is going to be in the summer, but it looks like it's, my guess would be it's going to involve different kinds of players.
Well, I think with Piontek, that would be certainly one that I would be interested in. I mean, he doesn't seem to have a place at Milan. Milan seem to have moved on. They've got Zlatan. They've got other striking options, and there's not going to be minutes for Piontek. And he joined them, I want to say, either summer of last year or in January last year. And when he first came on board over there, he was scoring goals, you know, left, right, and center. And he's cooled off a bit this season. And I believe what it is mostly attributable is like a finishing slump. But I think he's the kind of player that you take a shot on. And you, even if it's a shot that costs you 20, 30 million pounds, whether it's if it's a transfer, and it may well not, it may be a loan. But if it's a transfer, you take a shot on him at 20, 30 million pounds. And if he scores goals, he scores goals. And then if he doesn't, you dump him in a few seasons. And, you know, like, look, we did it with Vincent Janssen.
That is not an experience I'm eager to replicate, by the way.
Yeah, but, I mean, at the end of the day, we basically broke even on Janssen in terms of what we paid, what his contract was, what we ended up selling him for. Like, you know, and Piontek is going to cost more money than Janssen did. And I don't know. I don't know if there's more or less bust potential there. There are other people that watch Serie A and AC Milan much closer than I do. But I think that is kind of like the level of player that you're talking about for Tottenham Hotspur if you're not willing to go out and spend 60, 70 million pounds. Like, you are taking a risk on any striker in the 30 million pound range. Like, that's just what you're doing. It's, you know, is it somebody who's broken and hasn't played well in a couple seasons, like an Andre Silva at Frankfurt, or is it Piontek who is in a finishing slump, or is it, you know, somebody who has less of a proven track record? Because you're not getting a 20-30 goal striker for 30 million pounds in this day. You're just not. I mean, those guys are going for 65, 75 in that range.
I mean, it seems like the reaction to the striker to me is largely some mix between, well, he's not that good, but also Milan seemed to fuck up their transfers a lot, so maybe it's worth doing anyway.
I mean, yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Ben, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I mean, so this kid, I don't know how good he actually is, but he scored 13 goals in 19 games at Genoa before he moved to Milan. He scored today for Milan, actually. You know, and even in his poor performances at Milan this season, the last half of the year, he scored 9 goals in 18 matches. And I don't know how many of those were starts or whatever, but like, he does have a good record as a goal scorer. You know, this season he has 4 and 18, which is, you know, the finishing slump Brian's talking about. But, you know, it's not like this guy just sucks. He's a guy who has done it in the past and isn't doing it right now. And if we believe that the circumstances that are contributing to his poor form at the moment are circumstances that we can control for and compensate for, then yeah, I'm happy to take a shot at him, because I agree, like, getting a actual goal scorer on the pitch and then being able to play, you know, Lo Celso, Dele, and Son off of that striker with Lucas as a bench option, I feel a lot better about than starting Lucas Moura for the rest of the season, because Lucas just isn't that good, and he's not a striker. Like, you know, he has good ups and can head the ball, and he has a nice strike, but he just doesn't move like a striker or play like a striker. And you know, I think we would definitely be a better team with an actual striker on the pitch. You know, that seems obvious to say. So if this is a guy that we've targeted and said, you know, we think his value doesn't reflect his quality, then yeah, I'm all for it.
Well, and I mean, the other thing we have to take into consideration is, like, Milan has been an absolute trash fire this year. Like, they're on their second manager of the season, and, you know, that none of the parts that they seem to have seem to fit together. Everybody's been playing in a weird, a different tactic from last year, how they were playing under Gattuso. It's just, it's been a weird season for Milan. And so the fact that Piątek's finishing is falling off and his production has fallen down is not really all that surprising. So if you, like Ben said, if you're evaluating him and you're looking at him and you think, like, okay, the problems with his season this far in terms of why his production is lower, those are related to, okay, he's in a finishing slump, or, okay, the supply he's getting from Milan's other players is not good, or the tactic doesn't fit him, then you have to take that in consideration. And I think, you know, based on the limited amount of things that I know about this kid, I think that he is a decent striker, and that, you know, like Ben said, he scored those goals at Genoa. He did decently well after his transfer to Milan. If he's available and Milan want to get rid of him, I think that's something you take a flyer on.
It's also worth remembering 20, 30 million ain't what it used to be. And that might feel more, I think at first blush that feels more expensive to me than, you know, it ought to be, but it probably isn't.
And yeah, that's pennies in this transfer market.
I mean, this is probably like what a 15 million pound striker used to be, right?
Right. And, you know, it's also, like, it's easy to just assume Milan is AC Milan. They're a good team. But, like, you know, they're in 10th this season. They're as close to relegation as they are to the top four. Like, you know, they're just not having a good time out there.
Milan's been fucking up strikers for, like, 10 years now, it feels like. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is you just got to hope, like, are they misusing him or have they broken him? And that's, I don't know, you would hope our scouts would be able to deduce that. I think what is most interesting here is, you know, with Pochettino gone, Levy's just, like, fucking thrilled to go back into his, like, bargain bin of weird European transfers to supplement the squad. And he must be loving this.
Well, that's the thing. That's the other question is we have made one signing today, which we should talk about, is Jedson Fernández, and what does that mean for us? But there is certainly a pattern with our transfer rumors, and that all of these guys, besides Piątek, is that how you say it? Piątek?
I think you're adding an N.
No, I think actually the Polish pronunciation does have an N in it. That's
Jesus Christ.
I'm trusting James Horncastle on this. I've heard him pronounce, he loves Piątek, and I've heard him pronounce it on multiple different podcasts, that way. So that's what I'm going with.
All right. Well, I trust that. So the thing is the rest of our transfer targets all have in common that they are managed by George Mendes, and, you know, Jose Mourinho certainly has priors where he signs guys from his super agent buddy, and I don't know if there's some kickbacks involved or what, but
we're just, you know, getting some of his more obscure clients, either higher profiles or better paydays.
Right. So, I mean, Zé Luis, who we were linked with, was one of his clients, and Jedson Fernández, who we signed, is one of his clients. And so, you know, it might prove that even though our scouts and our department, our transfer department does like this kid from Milan, it's not going to matter because we're only going to be signing guys that Jose handpicks from Portugal so he can get paid under the table.
We backed off Zé Luis, which is,
that we've been linked with have been, you know, Nelson Semedo at Barcelona, Andre Silva at Frankfurt, Ricardo Pereira at Leicester, although I don't know why he would leave Leicester.
Not anymore, no.
Cancelo at Man City. So, you know,
look, yeah, that, been, oh, yeah, 100%. Like, give me that one.
I mean, I'd take Semedo too. Like, that'd be fine. I mean, Andre Silva has been down the last couple years, but he went through Milan and then hasn't really picked it back up at Frankfurt, so I don't know. But like, he might be another guy that's only 25 or 30 million pounds that you take a flyer on as a striker.
Well, I think what's interesting about our transfer rumors, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of more swirling around us than usual. It seemed to really pick up after Kane and in particular, well, Kane in particular, but Sissoko got injured, and our transfer rumors seemed to get more of a sense of panic, or at least like we need bodies in here, desperation, than they did before. And
yeah, which is just encouraging and also, you know, terrifying at the same time. But yeah, let's talk for a second about the guy we did sign, who is Jason Fernandez, is a midfielder from Benfica, who we signed on an 18-month loan for a very cheap loan fee. Is there an option to buy or a mandatory buy?
Yeah, it's 4.5 to buy, and we have him for 18 months. And if we decide we want to buy him, it's going to be, I think, 50 million euros. It might be pounds. I think it's euros. And I don't think there's any obligation to buy. I haven't seen if there's any obligation to buy. So it looks like if we ever feel like canceling this loan, we're out 4.5 million plus whatever the salary we've paid him.
So an 18-month loan is a very long loan. We've never done it before. To sort of explore whether this guy is...
Doesn't sound like Benfica's all that broken up about it, does it?
You know, and it's interesting because, like, you know, learning about this guy as we've signed him is he was, as a kid, their hottest prospect. They saddled him with, like, a 150 million euro release clause, which was the highest release clause they've ever put in a contract before. It's just, like, absolutely insane. It's more than they ended up getting for João Felix from Atletico Madrid, and he went for, like, 130 million euro or something ridiculous. And so, like, this guy was considered absolute hot shit for a minute there. And it sounds like management changed and his role changed a little bit and his favorability went down. And he's really struggled since then.
He also had a foot injury, didn't he?
Sure.
Yeah, he had a fractured metatarsal.
Okay, so he missed time due to injury as well. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think there's enough you could convince... You could talk yourself into this one, I feel like.
You know, like, since he's been back and since he's been in the team, which has been not very much this season, he has played kind of like a Sissoko-esque box-to-box midfielder. He dribbles well. He passes okay. He tackles pretty well. You know, I think the stats people are kind of puzzled by this. They don't see a lot in the numbers to say, oh, yeah, this is an obvious slam dunk. But it is a weird enough mix of skills coupled with a lot of years of, like, really legitimate hype around him that, like, maybe there's something there. I don't know. I really don't know what to make of this.
Sorry to cut you off, Ben, but I think one of the interesting things to consider is we have to take into account that, like, Benfica is so much better than a lot of the competition they're facing in the Portuguese league. Like, Benfica is spending most of the game with the ball. Like, they are having 60%+ possession against most of the teams that they're playing. And so his opportunity for defensive actions or to do things against, you know, a defense that isn't bunkered down and set in a low block are pretty limited. And so I think if you're evaluating him based on some of the stats and some of the things that, you know, that you talk about in terms of
his raw per 90 numbers aren't necessarily reflective of, like, the games he's playing in.
Right, like his dribbles per 90 or his interceptions per 90 or anything like that. I'm certain that he is going to play in a different way under Jose Mourinho at Tottenham Hotspur, and he's going to be involved in different types of games than he was at Benfica. I don't know necessarily how his style of play or his technical and tactical abilities translate to playing in a way other than that. Because I'll be honest, I've probably seen, I don't know, two or three Benfica games in the last 2 years, and I don't recall if he played. I remember watching last year to watch Joao Felix, and he was really good, but I could not tell you if this kid played not in those games that I watched. So I'm not going to pretend to know anything about this guy. But what I will say is that, you know, how he was playing at Benfica is not going to be how he's going to play at Spurs. And it may be that, you know, in looking at him in terms of just like eye test stuff, we are looking at him and we see a player that has the raw materials to turn into a player that can be useful in the Premier League. And whether that makes him Moussa Sissoko light, or an improvement on Moussa Sissoko, or if that makes him, you know, Ramirez at Chelsea circa, I don't know, when was Ramirez at Chelsea? 2012, 2014, something like that? I don't know. Like, if he's that, then I think that's probably fine for us. And if he turns out to be Ryan Mason or Nabil Bentaleb, then we haven't taken on much level of risk, and he goes back to Benfica in a year or 6 months or a year and a half. And we're not really out anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is like, if we liked Moussa Sissoko as a component for this team, which obviously is not a universal given, a guy who can do the things that he does while he's injured and maybe does some of the things better, is a reasonable kind of person to buy. You know, would I rather Spurs have bought like a dedicated defensive midfielder? Absolutely. You know, and it's possible that that's still on the cards, and this is not mutually exclusive with any future signing because he is so cheap, and you know, it's essentially playing with house money with this kid. He, you know, costs basically nothing over the course of the season. You know, I'd be concerned if it was this is our fix for our midfield, because just based on what his skill sets seem to be at Benfica, it's not the guy that you want long-term pairing with Ndombele in midfield to form, you know, a title-challenging Champions League-winning side. But he does seem to have a useful set of skills that we are certainly lacking in Sissoko's absence. And, you know, given the sort of paucity of options in midfield in general, you know, whatever some confident midfielder might bring to the table probably only makes us better.
Well, the one of the other things I thought was interesting is there was a guy on Twitter, I believe it was at Smarter Scout. He had a thread about Jedson today, and it through whatever scouting software they have or whatever, they were able to compare Jedson to his central midfield profile to other players in top five leagues in Europe, and three of the top four comparisons that he came up for with Jedson were Lo Celso and Ndombele, and Lo Celso at PSG.
What?
So we've got Lo Celso Batiste, Lo Celso PSG, and Tanguy Ndombele at Olympic Lyonnais last year.
That guy was having trouble getting minutes at Benfica?
Well, I mean, look, I'm just saying, like, in terms of his, like, statistical profile and what he's good at and what he does, like, we've signed another midfielder who is, like, at least statistically and stylistically similar to Lo Celso and Ndombele. And, you know, if you go down the list further on this guy's tweet, he's got Keita, Kovacic, Rabiot.
What the fuck?
Jack Wilshere. Maybe not that good. But like, and then the number one comp is Francisco Ramon Alcaron Suarez. So Suarez at not Luis Suarez, but what's his name? Dennis Suarez at Real Madrid. I think that's what his name is, right?
You mean at Barcelona?
I don't know.
No, Dennis Suarez is at Real at Barcelona. So who's this kid at Real Madrid?
Modric.
No, it's that same Suarez. I really should have.
Nobody knows or cares.
So here's, I think, the reality of this. This is a weird transfer, and it probably wouldn't have happened if Mendes wasn't his agent. I would feel a lot better about it. Like you said, Ben, we're kind of playing with house money here. It sounds like we can get out of this with no real long-term consequences. the kid's career has stalled a little bit, but he's certainly got something. But like I said, the thing that makes me nervous about this is I just don't like getting into bed with Mendes. Now, it's not saying that Mendes can't get us good players, but I don't know. I don't feel like that ends very well. And for a club with more modest financial like resources than some of the other clubs Mourinho's been at in recent years, like, I don't know, getting in the sort of Mendes industrial complex makes me very worried.
Brian, the Francisco... It's Isco, yeah.
Yep. I was like, why can't I figure this out? So, all right.
Typical
so,
Americans.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't know that Isco was short for Francisco. I don't know why. I just thought his name was Isco. So, whatever.
Yeah. So.
But I mean, that's like a pretty good list of comparison. I don't know what Greg was talking about. I wasn't listening. I was Googling.
Thanks. Appreciate that. It's Mendes. I don't like getting in bed with Mendes. It makes me very nervous. Like, we don't have the financial resources of some of these other clubs that Mourinho has bled dry over the last couple of years. And that makes me very nervous.
But here's the thing. To be both on scouting analytics, not relationships with the super manager who is going to feed us clients and swear that they're good and we're going to hope for the best and take his word for it. It's not the best transfer policy. That said, his clients tend to be pretty elite players and good talent. So,
who are, you know, typically out of our price range.
But that's not the issue right now. We're buying his like budget options. So, maybe they're good budget options.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's not terrifying me right now, which is it seems like we can get out of these pretty easily if they don't work out. So, that's nice, but I don't know.
I mean, look, we have done similar things to getting in bed with George Mendes. Like, we had sporting directors in Camoli and Baldini who basically were just utilizing Rolodexes of agents. Like, you know, it's not like this is a new thing for Tottenham Hotspur. This is a new thing only in the fact that we are dealing with a real super agent and someone who might actually have a decent Rolodex of players, you know? So I'm less concerned about that. Like, look, I get that Mendes is kind of sketchy and that, you know, maybe his reputation is not that great. But by the same token, you know, you have to deal with these sorts of power brokers, these sorts of agents in the modern game. And whether it's Mendes or Mino Raiola or whoever, you're not going to sign elite players without dealing with someone of their ilk. And look, if we get a deal on a player like Jedson or any other Mendes client, then okay, that's fine. Like, I'm not gonna get bent out of shape about it, I don't think.
Look, at least there's potential here. It's not like we're signing some 27-year-old. I mean, it sounds like we almost did, but for right now, you know, we're getting a guy where, you know, if it's Moussa Sissoko, but he hasn't hit his ceiling yet, that's not the worst player in the world to go get.
I mean, by all accounts, it's like he's a phenomenal dribbler and a very good ball winner, and the rest of his game is maybe a little lacking, but those are skills that we could certainly use. You know, we need a guy who can win the ball in midfield, and dribbling is always fun. So I'm happy with it. You know, I think I'm concerned about what it means for our transfer policy in a meta sense, in that, you know, we may be overly relying on this guy, but
There's enough short-termism here where I can talk myself out of that, at least for the time being, but for longer term, that could be a problem, yes.
Right. If the next, like, 5 years of Jose Mourinho Tottenham, which, God, I hope we don't have 5 years of that to watch.
You don't want to see players taken out of our youth squad, Ben? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not just the youth squad. Like, we have seen Jose quit on Lukaku and Kevin De Bruyne and Mohamed Salah, and, you know, these guys have turned out to be some of the best players in the world, and, yeah, I was, not gonna lie, very concerned that Lo Celso was gonna end up on that same fucking scrap heap. So, yeah, it's concerning, but, you know.
So, speaking of Mourinho, this is actually a good... this is the last thing I want to talk about on today's podcast. A lot of journalists. I think Jonathan Liu led the charge in the... Independent, I think he works for. I can't remember. My apologies to Jonathan. But a really critical article about Mourinho's
management. Because he very much listens to our show.
Definitely. He wrote a really critical article about Mourinho's management after the Liverpool match. And just like really kind of scathing about how Spurs lacked ambition and this isn't going to like work and we've really lowered our standards. And, you know, just like kind of the kind of Mourinho... paint-by-the-numbers sort of hit piece we were seeing at the end of his time, probably after he's left Madrid, frankly. I thought that was a really weirdly timed piece. Like, I think you could have dropped that at any point in the last 2 weeks. And I think what's more interesting is a lot of other journalists sort of echoed this sentiment. Jack Pitt-Brook did it from The Athletic. I heard Marcotti talking about it on his podcast. With ESPN, just it seemed to really sort of, you know, Julian Laurens was talking about it on that same podcast. A lot of it just seemed to be bouncing around the sort of like English journo echo chamber in a way that I don't know. I was very surprised by. I thought this was like honestly one of our better performances under Mourinho, and frankly, on a Tottenham team that does legitimately have a lot of players injured. And has not been playing well this year, and is going up against like maybe the best team in Europe. I don't know, that seems like a weird game to criticize him for being defensive. And when you consider that, I think we actually really took the game to Liverpool. That seems like an even weirder game to drop these hits on. I don't know. Do you guys see anything in these criticisms that makes it make more sense to you? Because I was very perplexed by the sort of just this being all over the place after the Liverpool match.
Well, so I think we kind of glossed over the actual Liverpool match in our rush to praise Tangang. But
it's not a rush when it's the right thing to do.
That's right. Eagerness, I guess. You know, the reality is the first half of Liverpool, we played a very strong defensive game that happened to get undone by a pretty sloppy goal. You know, it was a little bit of head tennis around the box, and then a nice ball into Firmino, who took a good touch to turn Tanganga to score. But, you know, we played a very deliberate game plan of defend and counter that worked very well. And then as soon as they scored and it stopped working, we shifted our strategy to playing a much more possession-oriented, attack-minded game plan. And that also worked really well. I mean, I agree. I think the Liverpool game was one of our stronger performances in recent weeks. We did not look outclassed by, like you said, the best team in Europe. And so in terms of these, like, journalistic hit pieces, I honestly think that this is a narrative that's been brewing for some time. I've certainly been very unhappy, and I think a lot of Spurs fans have been, over the Christmas period watching us lose games to fucking terrible teams and draw to Middlesbrough in the cup and, you know, shit the bet against Chelsea in stupid fashion. Like, you know, I don't think any of us have been very happy with the Jose Mourinho era over the Christmas period. And I firmly believe that a lot of these takes were pre-written around that narrative, and they fully expected us to get fucking stomped by Liverpool, and that would be the nail in that coffin to like really cement the truth of these hot takes about how bad Jose Spurs has been. And when the Liverpool game happened and we still lost, even though we lost in pretty respectable fashion, I thought, nobody moderated their takes to incorporate that. It was just one more loss in the string of bad losses over Christmas. And yeah, it felt like pretty lazy journalism. You know, they were timing an appropriate piece to try and get maximum clicks out of a presumed bad loss that backfired, and then they just rolled him out anyway. I don't know. I thought it was all pretty disappointing, honestly.
It was really strange, just because not only did I think, you know, I thought all the tactics were pretty smart and justifiable considering who we were playing. I thought it was a pretty fun match to watch, even when we were playing defensively and countering. Like, it wasn't like this was some joyless slog, like some of Mourinho's better teams have done at times. I mean, like, I don't know. Like you said, I think you put this out that Chelsea week, maybe it's a little early, but it's certainly a lot more fair. I mean, this was just sort of like, maybe I'm feeling pretty good right now because the game against Burrow was kind of fun and we haven't, like, let ourselves down on the weekend yet, but it just felt really strange to see this, not just from one journalist, but it seemed to be lots of different people saying it, and it was just, I don't know, I was very perplexed by the whole thing. I think your explanation makes as much sense as anything there, Ben, because I can't come up with a better explanation for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, he dropped this after the Norwich draw, the Southampton loss, the Burrow draw, like, any of those games, it's ripe to fucking dig into Jose. And then I think a lot of people were just like, well, Liverpool's coming and it's going to be a bloodbath. And it very well could have been. And I think they were just primed and ready for that to happen. And it just didn't go down that way.
Well, let's hope it stays that way.
We were, just go by that. Like, we were very credibly good. Like, Son had two or three good chances. Lo Celso, we already talked about the equalizing opportunity that he had. Like, we gave as good as we got in that match, even though, you know, we let Liverpool be quote-unquote on top for a while, just in terms of ball possession.
I think Liverpool was extraordinarily lucky, and I think that's like sort of one of the themes of their season, as good as they are. I think they've been extraordinarily lucky all season. I think they were really lucky to take all 3 points from this match. And frankly, like, if Spurs had connived to take all three just by luck, like, I don't think that would have been the most preposterous thing in the world.
No, not at all. I mean, I think a draw was a fair result for that game. Expected goals has it pretty close, and just, you know, having watched the game, I think we owned the second half, and they owned the first half, but in their ownership of the first half, they didn't really create a ton of great clear chances besides the one that Tanganga blocked early on. And
one day something's not going to go Liverpool's way again, and I just hope I'm alive to see it, because shit's getting real fast.
So talking about Liverpool real quick. One of the silver linings about Liverpool's phenomenal season, like, as much as I don't want to
see Liverpool, this is a very good point. Yeah, please make it. I know where you're going with this.
Anything good happen to them, if they do win the league with a much better invincible season than Arsenal and kind of undercut that sort of, like, last saving grace in their memories of what a good Arsenal team looks like and do it better, I'm pretty okay with that, honestly. Like, that makes me pretty happy.
Like, as long as they could please just fall apart very quickly after that, yeah.
Yeah, if next season they're, like, in relegation form and terrible, I'll give them an invincible season.
Yeah, if Pochettino could go, like, tongue-kiss Klopp and give him a case of whatever he had this year, that would be just delightful.
The thing that would really, though, make it more enjoyable is if we were, like, demonstrably better than Arsenal.
Yeah, I'll never forgive anyone involved with this team this year for fucking this up for us. Like, just being able to sort of be comfortably in the top four and laugh at Arsenal and make them eat our shit all season, that would have been really nice.
Yeah, instead we're both, like, what, 8th and 10th and only a few points apart, and Wolves and Sheffield United are better than both of us, and yeah, so it'd be a lot more fun if we were in, like, Leicester's position, where we're, you know, nowhere near the title, but we're in third place and not really in any trouble.
Exactly. It would be much better.
Yeah. Having, like, an okay, good season and being able to laugh at Arsenal is definitely a better season than this.
Well, guys, we went on for a while tonight. I guess amazing things happen when Tottenham actually give us some fun things to talk about. Here's hoping they keep it up. I don't know. There's a very dumb part of my brain that feels like, I don't know if we've turned a corner, but I feel like Lo Celso has turned a corner, and that makes me very happy. So, I don't know. I think there should be some interesting things this weekend. Maybe Mourinho will pull another random youth teamer out of his hat who will go on to have an amazing first-team performance. Or perhaps a random Portuguese midfielder. I don't know. It would be interesting to see.
Well, you know, I will say I'm a little concerned. Watford are in phenomenal form right now. They've won 4 of their last 5. Since Nigel Pearson took over, they look like a team reborn. And it is going to be a shame when all this exciting momentum gets arrested by the 17th best team in England.
I don't know. Which do you think is more likely, losing to a team that's on a good run right now or losing to a team that hasn't won in like 2 months and then Dr. Tottenham comes to town?
That's true. That is true.
I think we got a reverse jinx going here, Ben.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. Benjamin, where can people find you on the internet?
Y'all can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
Brian, where can people find your hot political takes online?
No political takes, but you can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. And if you are interested in buying the surplus of crystals that I still have left over from earlier in the year, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn at Brett Rainbow.
There you go. You can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. Wow, what a long podcast, you guys. If you liked it, if you made it this far, I think you're obligated to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Please do. It really helps us out, and it makes us feel better. And God knows Tottenham fans need something to feel better about this year. Hopefully this keeps up. For Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, come on, you Spurs.